Does human life matter? Many today think the answer is no. The idea that human life is intrinsically valuable is dying, says author and intellectual historian Richard Weikart. He traces the dangerous trends in Western thinking that could spell what he calls the death of humanity. In his new book, The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life, CSC senior fellow Richard Weikart traces the roots of this attitude that humans are just advanced apes wearing clothes. It will probably not surprise anyone that Darwinism played a key role in this development. The book provides many shocking examples of the dehumanizing tendencies that flow from the Darwinian human is just another animal mentality. Those consequences, as Weikart explains, are coming home to roost, and they could be truly frightening. The Death of Humanity, written by Richard Weikart and released by Regnery Press, is now available online at Amazon.com and most other bookstores. Be sure to get your copy of The Death of Humanity by Richard Weikart.
Hello and welcome back. This is Todd Butterfield for IID The Future. We are in the second phase of a conversation with author and professor, Dr. Richard Weikart. He's a professor of history at California State University, Stanislaus, and we're talking about his new book, The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life. We've talked quite a bit, Dr. Weikart, about the man, the machine chapter and humans going ape chapter. One is a historical perspective and where Darwin comes in and the philosophies that intertwine about scientific materialism, and humans going ape is sort of what comes next and what has happened as a result of those philosophies, especially around us today. When we left off, we were talking about some of those philosophies and some of the contradictions of scientific materialists. Your book does an excellent job of pointing out the myriad of contradictions there are amongst the materialists versus their value for human life and things that they wouldn't agree with. For instance, you mentioned the philosopher Auguste Comte. He focused on humanity as a whole, and that is as a collective. And at the same time, it caused him to not really pay much attention to individuals in his own relationships. He espoused universal love and altruism, but he kind of neglected his own personal life. How frequently do you find that folks on the materialist side are caught in the contradiction today? Are most of them in that conundrum?
Yes, I think many of them are. And the reason is because they know deep down in their hearts that there is such a thing as love, that human life does have value. They know these things, and they often talk that way. At my university, people are constantly talking about social justice,
right,
other kinds of things, you know, inequality and all these norms and values. And they know that there's meaning and significance in all of these things. However, some of these very same people, if you sort of press them philosophically, they will, or certainly if you try to press any kind of your own morality on them that they don't agree with,
right,
they will say, oh, there is no such thing as morality. That's just subjective. That's just your opinion and such. But then if you push the right button, you'll find out that they really do believe that there are things that are right and wrong as well. Let me give you a really interesting example, too, that I bring out in my book that I think illustrates some of this tension too. That's Bertrand Russell. In the early 20th century, Bertrand Russell was one of the most prominent philosophers in the world. And he said in 1903, and I'll quote here from a portion of my book, a quotation from Bertrand Russell. He said, quote, that man is the product of causes which had no prevision of the end they were achieving, that his origin, his growth, his hopes and fears, his loves and his beliefs are but the outcome of accidental collocations of atoms, and that no fire, no heroism, no intensity of thought and feeling can preserve an individual life beyond the grave, that all the labors of the ages, all the devotion, all the inspiration, all the noonday brightness of human genius are destined to extinction in the vast death of the solar system, and that the whole temple of man's achievement must inevitably be buried beneath the debris of a universe in ruins. All these things, if not quite beyond dispute, are yet so nearly certain that no philosophy which rejects them can hope to stand. That's a pretty long sentence there.
Yes.
But you get the idea that there's no purpose, there's no meaning, there's no significance to human life. And yet, if you look at Bertrand Russell's life, Bertrand Russell was one of the most moralistic people around. Even while he denied that there was any objective morality, he went to jail for protesting against nuclear arms. He was about as moralistic as you could get. And actually his daughter, in an autobiographical writing about her relationship to her father, even points this out too, that he was extremely moralistic. He was about as absolutist morally as you could get, all the while claiming that there is no such thing as any kind of objective morality.
A quote from chapter one about reductionism. If you could just explain what that is, it reduces human being to the sum of his parts. Can you expound on that for me so that we can understand it?
Sure. Reductionism in this case is trying to reduce humans to just their physico-chemical processes. So humans are nothing more than just a bunch of atoms. And so you try to explain everything about human behavior based on physical laws happening or what's happening in the synapses of your neurons in your brain. I mean, this is the kind of way that people kind of look at it. So that's the reductionistic view, trying to reduce humans to nothing more than our physical or chemical makeup.
And yet if a person thinks that through, things cannot be explained in that way. For instance, consciousness. I'm sure there's been deep philosophical treatises on this elsewhere. But consciousness or art, do you see that discussion today when you're talking with your colleagues?
Well, sure. And consciousness is a great example because the biologists who are trying to run this reductionist kind of philosophy don't have an explanation for consciousness, although they keep promising they're going to come up with something. And so that seems to be one of the favorite arguments against my kind of views is that, oh, we're going to get there in the future. Somehow we will come up with an explanation of this or that. And of course, intelligent design runs in the same kind of thing too. Yeah, we can't explain it now, we'll explain it in the future. But actually, science can't operate by promising what it's going to find in the future because science can't know what it's going to find in the future. That's not the way science operates.
Right. But is science truly a be-all and end-all in and of itself? Can it really explain everything?
No, and that's part of the point of my book. Another issue that you didn't even mention was the issue of free will, which is also another big point that comes into this debate. Because if humans do indeed have free will, then the reductionistic explanations make absolutely no sense because reductionists are trying to explain everything according to physical and chemical processes. So those that buy into a materialistic or positivistic kind of viewpoint about humanity have to deny free will, and they do. So this then reduces our human agency completely. But once again, I do try to point out in my book that most people, even with deny free will, they have to live as though it really did exist. And so in some sense, they don't really believe that. Some will say, oh, it's just an illusion that we're living according to. But I find that a very, very interesting argument because many materialists have complained again and again about people who have religion, which they claim is an illusion. And so they'll say, well, you're living according to an illusion. But then when you ask them, why then are you living in an illusion as though morality and free will exist? Because they do live that way. So if they were pressed, I think they would have to admit that they are living according to an illusion.
True enough. Now, let's make a quick connection, if possible, to things happening today. Would the results of thinking purely as a materialist today be evident in some things that are occurring worldwide in politics, in war, political viewpoints, and how countries are run?
Well, one of the things in my book that I try to focus on is ways that this thinking about humanity has impacted bioethics and particularly issues relating to the killing of humans, such as abortion, infanticide, assisted suicide, euthanasia. But I also do bring in some issues of some mass killings and shootings that have happened as well that people have done based on their own philosophies of thinking that human life is not special or sacred.
As Columbine.
Columbine is one of the more prime examples, but it's not the only one. There was also one in Finland where Ovinen, a young man, shot up his high school and very explicitly claimed that he was doing it based on his philosophical understanding, which included Darwinism, among other things, not just Darwinism. But that was one of the main things. One of his nicknames was Natural Selector. And of course, Eric Harris at Columbine, he wore a T-shirt saying Natural Selection on the day that he went shooting in Columbine. And if you read his diaries, which I have, and I bring in some of that material from his diaries in my book, Death of Humanity, he said, everything is just math and chemistry. Get over it. That's what he said in his diary at one point. So he did have this reductionistic view of humans, that our life isn't valuable, that we're just a bunch of atoms thrown together over time, and so human life has no real meaning or significance.
There's an alternative to the materialist view, and that is believing that there is an intelligence behind our design. And that opens up a whole completely new way of acting and thinking, or does it?
Yes, I believe it does, because it also opens us up to, and we think about the intelligent design as rationality, but I would like to suggest too that there's also the element of moral significance and love also being part of that design that humans have. The fact that we have moral feelings, the fact that we have love and such within our makeup are signs of this intelligent design and show that we do have significance beyond just being a bunch of chemicals thrown together over eons of time. So I would argue, yes, that it does make a huge difference to it. And it makes us view human life in a quite different way than if you think you're just a chance event. Interestingly, when I first came up with the idea of writing this book, it was when I was giving a talk to a group on my campus, and the title of my talk was, "Are You the Image of God or a Cosmic Accident?"
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me we're faced with that polarized choice to make, which is, do we have significance, meaning, and value in life as being created beings, or are we simply an accident that's come together over eons of time?
Well, I'm sure that the title itself brought a good crowd and a good discussion. And I wish we had more of those happening. We've been talking with Dr. Richard Weikart about his book, The Death of Humanity. Next time, we'll explore the parts of the book that position two types of philosophical evangelism against each other today. Until then, this has been Todd Butterfield for ID the Future.
Does human life matter? Find out in the new book, The Death of Humanity, written by Richard Weikart and released by Regnery Press. The Death of Humanity is now available online at Amazon.com and most other bookstores. Be sure to get your copy of The Death of Humanity by Richard Weikart.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.